Für alle ein Fest. Zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Volvic Naturell. 1,5 Liter für nur 49 Cent. Zuzüglich Pfand. Oder Almare Räucherlachs XXL. 220 Gramm für nur 3,49 Euro. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/Stu Does America. Be sure to subscribe and hit the bell so you'll know every time we post or go live. Miranda Devine is here with some crazy new details about the man who tried to assassinate Donald Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania. I'll check in on the status of the Epstein Files release vote. We're going to start by doing, like apparently many, many people have across the country, doing Olivia Nuzzi. And this is a fascinating story. And I want to say up front, I swear there's a point to it. It's not just me telling you some salacious story. I swear there's a point to all of this. But you probably don't know much of the story. You probably don't follow these sorts of back and forth, you know, inside media stuff all that often. So I want to kind of get you up to speed on the story and who Olivia Nuzzi is. She's a big time reporter, like, you know, one of the big celebrated media reporters on the left. And she had this rocket ship sort of road from unknown to massive success, like this, you know, really like a, you know, atmospheric rise that you can't believe, right? It's one of those things where you're like, whoa, this is incredible. Now, she starts off at like 20 years old, and she is working, of course, for the Anthony Weiner campaign. She's working inside the Anthony Weiner campaign when he's running for mayor, okay? Which is, again, not at all shocking when you know the rest of the story. So in 2013, she's working for that mayoral campaign. That campaign's a disaster. He doesn't win. And she writes a piece that winds up going in the New York Daily News that kind of like gives a expose as into the background of what was going on in the campaign. And, you know, it's well written. People enjoy it. They're like, wow, this is incredible reporting. And so she turns this basically this one column, this one story into this massive run of success. Now, when this happens, there is a woman inside of the campaign, communication director for Weiner, Barbara Morgan. She thought she was off the record talking to a Talking Points memo, and she goes on a tirade against Nuzzi, calls her all sorts of derogatory terms. You know, it's the typical spicy inside media stuff you'd expect from D.C., New York sort of, you know, media circles. Now, this is like a year after she's 20 or 21 years old. She turns this one column into a job at the Daily Beast. Now, the Daily Beast's editorial and journalistic standards are, it's hard to get lower than them. I can't think of a term. I mean, you're certainly below cockroaches as far as quality goes, but they are way, way, way down there. They hire her at 21 years old. I mean, this is not how this normally works. You usually have to work at a million really boring jobs before you get a job where you're like profiling candidates and doing all these big things in the media. She just rises up. How? How is she doing this? I mean, her writing is seemingly pretty good, I guess, but like, there's a lot of good writers out there. She's just on a, she's just like rocket ship to the moon here. She's still at Fordham, in college, while she is doing this, and she gets hired to cover the Rand Paul and Chris Christie campaigns and some of Donald Trump's initial rise in that 2016 campaign cycle. November 2016, she is named one of the 16 breakout media stars of the presidential election by Politico. 2017, she's hired by New York Magazine as their Washington correspondent. And again, that might not sound like all that big of a deal to you. They didn't even have a Washington correspondent. They basically created this high-profile Washington job just for her. She's 24 years old. Pretty amazing run of success here. How did she do this? 2018, she's in the Forbes 30 under 30 list, the 30 biggest rising stars under 30 years old. She had, some bumps around the way. She had a little bit of a mini scandal when she was admitted to entering Corey Lewandowski's home without permission to take a photo. He was very upset about that, as you might be. My reporter's breaking into your home. But that kind of blew over pretty fast. She got, in fact, very quickly after that, actually got invited to the White House for an exclusive interview with Donald Trump in the Oval Office. Now, again, she's, I don't know, what, you know, mid-20s here at this point. Just this incredible rise. She got a job doing a documentary for MSNBC. She portrayed herself on the Showtime show Billions, which is, you know, a big thing for someone in the media. September 2022, she becomes engaged to Politico's chief Washington correspondent, Ryan Lizza. She's a finalist for the National Magazine Award in 2023. Okay, so you get the idea. She's coming, you know, big career. Really, really fast. And one that is, I will say, like, you know, that even through, like, the 2024 election, like, she's got big scoops. She had a big one with Rudy Giuliani at one point. She had another big one. Talked to Donald Trump. Trump talked to her relatively regularly. And she was not complimentary to Trump, but would occasionally, you know, give some good coverage. And then she did a big profile of RFK Jr. Now, this is when RFK Jr. is still running as, I think, an independent at this point. I can't remember if he was a Democrat or independent. It was before he had the coalition with Donald Trump. Big profile on RFK Jr. And that goes, and you might remember this part of the story because this happened during the campaign cycle, but there's a bit of a report, I believe from Oliver Darcy, who broke the story initially, that after this big profile of RFK Jr. happened, it was a bit of a what they called an emotional affair that happened. I remember she's engaged to this other reporter, Ryan Lizza. So this all comes out. A New York Magazine correspondent placed on leave for a relationship with RFK Jr. This is obviously, in theory, if you care about journalism, a big, big no-no. You don't, you know, hook up, have an emotional affair, whatever you want to call it, with a person that you're profiling, right? Like, you're a reporter. You're supposed to be doing reporting that is unbiased about your sources. You're not supposed to sleep with them. I mean, I hate to break this to you, boys and girls. If you're looking to get into the journalism industry, you're not supposed to do that. Though maybe it is a path towards success in that realm, as we learn. New York Magazine placed its Washington political correspondent Olivia Nuzzi on leave Thursday evening for engaging in a personal relationship with former presidential hopeful RFK Jr. That was a violation of the magazine's standards around conflicts and interests and disclosures. Media reporter Oliver Darcy first reported on the leave Thursday, and while New York Magazine did not name Kennedy, RFK Jr., Darcy identified him as the politician involved. Now, this is obviously becomes a big scandal in their world, right? She is in real trouble. She winds up, Ryan Lizza is like, okay, see you later. They wind up breaking up and she's out. They have a big public battle. She files a protective order against him because she thinks he's going to release all this information about her. She fears he's leaking stuff. This is how they operate, of course. They're just using the tactics that each other use on each other. That protective order went away. There was a time where they were trading these protective orders. And then, of course, New York Magazine and Nuzzi part ways. Now, she kind of, after this, sort of disappears, right? She goes away, not making any news, not really doing anything. We don't know what she was doing. We know that Ryan Lizza believed that they were trying to keep everything quiet, right? Like, you go into a quiet period after something like this. Apparently, there was some negotiation about a non-disclosure, right, where they wouldn't, neither side would talk about that. I don't know how that got wrapped up. Also, there was apparently a message passed between some mutual friend that, you know, Olivia is saying, I'm never going to talk about this again. I hope you never talk about it again. All right, like, that's a screwed up world, but I guess that's the best way you can handle it after all that stuff happens, right? So she goes away. She's away for a year. We think is silent. What is she actually doing? Well, she's writing a tell-all, right? Of course, she's writing a book. She's in California writing a book. It's called American Canto? I don't even know. I mean, she's a writer. I'm not. Olivia Nuzzi, the book is out. The cover looks like it's made on MS Paint, but at least create a cover with AI. I mean, at least go the full distance. But it's just the red and the black, very fancy. This is the classy world. It's a classy world we're not allowed to go into. We're told by the media we're not good enough to go into that world. And you know what? We're probably not. Whatever we are, we shouldn't be in that world. Might be our choice, might be their choice, but it might be both. We might have actual agreement on this. We probably don't want to be in that world. She writes this book. It comes out in a couple of weeks. And you'd think a person who did this, I mean, remember, this is a woman who, you know, it seems like the emotional affair went pretty far. There were photos sent. There were exchanges of adoration from each side, blah, 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 blah. You get how that happens. So this was not like a, no one's really disagreeing with this. I mean, I don't think RFK Jr. has even come out and really sincerely pushed back on this. Now, of course, RFK Jr., also married, not that this has ever stopped him at any point in his entire life, but he was apparently going down that road pretty far, as well as he has with dozens, if not hundreds, of different women. It's not a, I mean, he's a Kennedy. So we shouldn't be shocked, though we can be critical of the way he behaves. I know you might like his position on food coloring, but I'm sorry, he seems to be a dirtbag. And has been for his entire life. Okay, that's a whole nother story, whole nother monologue. I mean, part of the reason I'm telling you this story is because I just love the people involved. They're all my favorite people. But so Olivia Nuzzi, how does she get treated by this? She's blown up the world of journalism. She slept with a source, or at least was close to sleeping with a source. We have no idea how far that went. How does she get treated? She gets ejected by the world of journalism, right? They can't stand her. No, of course, she gets a big profile in the New York Times. Nuzzi did it all for love. Can you imagine if you did this crap, how they would present this information about you? Now, maybe you're not a glamorous woman like Olivia Nuzzi is, but I promise you this would not be how you were portrayed if you went through this. Now, there's more to this. And I promise you there's a point to this. It's not just me telling you this story. I promise. Just because some of my favorite people in the world are involved, it's not just that. This is what the New York Times write. You could argue that referring to Kennedy and other players in the book by monikers like the politician, she doesn't actually name RFK Jr., she just calls him the politician, is literary. It also allows her to construct a world where everyone is a sketch and proof is besides the point. Wow. Nuzzi makes clear in the book that she realizes there are people who will disagree with her version of events. She does not try to prove them. That's quite an amazing. Can I do that too? I'm not going to try to prove to you anymore. I'm not going to give you quotes from government documents when I try to say things. I'll just change the name slightly and just say crap. That sounds great. She, of course, is a big political reporter. She was asked about her position of politics. This is while the Mamdani election is in the middle of it. And this is kind of a good reflection of who she is. She says, in the New York mayoral returns came in, she sat at Mel's Drive-In in Santa Monica. She was focused on the current mayor. Someone has got to be covering Eric Adams tonight, she said. What better way to memorialize Zoran Mamdani's win than to capture it through the eyes of the evening's ultimate loser, its incumbent mayor? I made a joke, this is the reporter saying, about how Adams had seemingly thrown away his life just to fly business class. Nuzzi shrugged. I destroyed mine for less, she said. First of all, not exactly complimentary to RFK Jr. I mean, geez, not even business class. But I digress. So all this is going on. She blows up her life and her relationship and her career over the relationship over text with RFK Jr. Then comes back with this big book. And her ex-fiancé, who thought, hey, we've got an agreement to not be talking, at least according to him, he's not that happy. Here they are together, the glamorous Nuzzi and Ryan Lizza, running in their big time political circles. He decides to write something. This comes out yesterday. It is on his Substack, Telos News is what it's called. It's called Part One, by the way, indicating there might be more parts. Part One, How I Found Out. Now, this is fascinating. How did he find out about his, you know, fiancé cheating with RFK Jr. in some way? On Monday, Nuzzi's ex-fiancé, fellow journalist Ryan Lizza, 51, claimed in a Substack post that Kennedy was not her first fling born of journalistic pursuits while they were in a relationship. Titled Part One, How I Found Out, Lizza's post recounts how he stumbled upon a love letter from Nuzzi to a famous politician, 32 years older than Olivia and well-known for a sex scandal, who's also a presidential candidate, a source, and the subject of Olivia's recent profile for New York. I want to read to you some of the stuff that he found as he was going over this to find this information out. She comes back from a trip. He finds some napkins, cocktail napkins from a hotel. Starts reading them. You know, a love letter is on there. This is in the love letter, it says things like this. If I swallowed every drop of water from the tower above your house, I would still thirst for you. Most of her writing is actually pretty good. Maybe that's not the best example. Now, he writes, unfortunately, the lack of a water tower on our Georgetown home's roof ruled me out as the note's intended recipient. I flipped to another page and saw a name in a first line of an unfinished love letter that had him that included enough details to confirm a physical relationship and the hint of some kind of falling out. My heart stopped when I realized who it was. Famous politician, 32 years older than Olivia, well known for a sex scandal, but more importantly, he was a presidential candidate, a source, and the subject of Olivia's recent profile from New York. The last line is what's causing lots of buzz, because you're like, okay, RFK Jr., right? I called my agent. We have a big problem, I said. Olivia is sleeping with Mark Sanford. Mark Sanford? The old South Carolina governor, the Republican governor of South Carolina. Wait, what? Yes, apparently, this is like a thing for her. She does a profile of a presidential candidate and then winds up hooking up with him. That is at least the allegation here, of course. Lizza dates his discovery to Nuzzi's affair with Sanford, 65, who served in Congress until 2019. You remember he was governor, then ran for Congress, and then ran for president. He suspended his campaign in November. The date they find this back to is March 2020. Lizza writes, she later explained to me that she became infatuated with him after their interview. She couldn't get him out of her head, and that his obsession intensified. She sent him increasingly risque pictures and texts, secretly followed him on the campaign trail when she told me she was out covering other candidates, and fantasized about a rendezvous, which was consummated at his home in South Carolina one night after she went dark on me and made up a story about how she was dealing with a crisis concerning her sick mother. So she's out there. She falls in love with this candidate, I guess, and he's obsessed with him, follows him around, wants to hook up with this old white dude. Now remember, Sanford, to his utter shame, at this point is running a candidate for president where he's like the upstanding guy as opposed to Donald Trump, who's bad, right? Like that was his shtick at the time. And he was like, I've recovered from all of my previous exploits. You'll remember he was on the Appalachian Trail when having a previous affair. Unbelievable. So here's the tweet from back in the day, 2019, when Olivia Nuzzi did wind up profiling Mark Sanford. I spent some time in South Carolina with Mark Sanford for New York Magazine, and they showed the pictures of Mark Sanford. Someone commented underneath, a guy named Sam Sanders says, hey, he looks, I don't know, happy. Olivia Nuzzi replies, I tend to have that effect. I bet you do. I bet you do. Wow, is that incredible. Okay, and it gets more incredible than that, because in the piece as well, there are new details about Olivia Nuzzi's previous relationship with another one of my favorite people in the entire world, Keith Olbermann. Unbelievable. Keith Olbermann suggests he dodged a bullet as he gloats over ex-girlfriend Olivia Nuzzi's latest scandals. And he posted in the most boomer way possible the gif of The Matrix where he is, dodging bullets. And he writes above it, this is me. Like, no, you're just supposed to post the gif, right? Like, you're not supposed to. This is me. Let me explain my joke to you. Anyway, so pathetic. The meme equally reflected his attempts at dodging the latest claims about his own time with the much younger writer. Lizza alleged Olbermann had acted as her sugar daddy by paying for her college tuition, fitting her out in Tom Ford and Hervé Leger. See, I don't belong in these circles. I don't even know how to pronounce the designer's name, but fancy dresses and $15,000 Cartier jewelry. While Keith, who was 34 years older, he was 55, she was 21 at the time, was generous, there were strings attached, Lizza wrote. Olivia had concealed the relationship from me and other friends, but one day she told me everything. Too much, actually. What does that mean? And together we hatched a plan for her escape. Interesting phrasing there. By the way, Keith Olbermann did reply to this, not to all of it, but he said, by the way, about this from Liz's reply, Olivia and I lived together for 4 years. It's four birthdays, four Christmases, four anniversaries. That's like $1,250 of jewelry per celebration. And her apartment was a writing studio. And I made an F-ton then. This guy's the worst guy in the world. What was I supposed to do? Get her a lot of gift certificates from Kmart? So he's saying, okay, that's not that much money. Apparently he was cheap too, by his own telling. I don't know. Now, what's interesting, just to trace this timeline back quickly, and I don't know, maybe this is what part two is about. I'll be fascinated to hear. But she's now 32 years old. He's writing this. In the writing, Lizza says it was a lost decade with her. That brings her back to 22 years old, approximately, if that number is accurate, 22 years old. And then Keith is saying they were together for 4 years. All right, 32 minus 20, 10, 22 minus 4, 18. I mean, that's, as far as I know, not illegal, but it's button up on the line there, Keithy. I wonder how that's interesting. Barely legal, apparently very, very important to Keith Olbermann. By the way, this goes on to say a little bit about this. And listen to this. Not long ago, I had helped her. Again, so she's 22, not long ago, so maybe 21, maybe 17 to 21. I hope it's 21 to 25. I want the best for Keith, of course. I'd helped her untangle herself from an unusual relationship with Keith Olbermann. Goes on to detail all the jewelry and all of that. But says, Keith, who was 34 years older, was generous, but there were strings attached. Olivia had concealed the relationship. We planned her escape, as I mentioned earlier. When friends asked why I never responded to Keith's public attacks on me and Olivia, I explained that she had felt stalked by Keith after she left him. I hope that's part two. I really want to know more about that. Ryan, I mean, you know, look, you're already in the middle of this. You might as well get some dirt out on Keith Olbermann. Please give us more. By the way, remember, this is a woman who we now know has slept with multiple people in the media and multiple people she profiled as a reporter. I kid you not, this is a real tweet. What I'm about to show you is a real tweet. This is real. I'm not kidding. I remember reading the story when she wrote it in New York Magazine. Why does Hollywood think female reporters sleep with their sources? And a picture of the woman from House of Cards who slept with Kevin Spacey in that series, basically saying, like, I can't believe Hollywood would say that about female reporters. We won't do such a thing. Now, I promise you, by the way, how does she get rewarded for all this behavior? How did she get rewarded for it? Of course, she's going to make a lot of money on books, probably a movie, too, about all of this. But her journalism was rewarded with a new West Coast editor job for Vanity Fair in September 2025. The least. So I said there's a point. Is there a point to all this? Yes. First of all, my question is, should we have a presidential litmus test? Should the first question of every debate be, did you sleep or do you intend to sleep with Olivia Nuzzi? I would like that to be at the start. But, you know, the point of this is the people that call you a racist, the people who call you a sexist, the people who call you homophobic, the people who tell you that you're killing your grandma because you decided to go outdoors at a park with a mask off, the people who call you selfish because you don't want to spend your money on transgender surgeries for illegal immigrants, those people are the worst people in the universe. They are all out there doing this crap while they're preaching to you. That's the world you live in right now. They're judging you all the time. Those people that I just described are the ones telling you you're a bad person. I want you to remember that next time you read their judgment in the media. Remember all of these fabulous stories. And I, for one, cannot wait for part two. Maybe need to calm down after that particular story. A lot of us just kind of rush through life. We don't take a moment to enjoy anything, to even taste the food that we're eating. We're just shoveling it down our gullets. But we could all use a little bit of time, a little bit of time to maybe not be swallowed up by hurry. Kindred Harvest was created as an antidote to all that nonsense, an invitation to build one calm moment into a world that never stops moving. And it's tea. And these teas are made with, you know, real whole ingredients. They can actually recognize, you know, leaves and vibrant herbs and flowers and roots and spices. No mystery, you know, powders, no artificial flavors hiding behind all the pretty labels. Everything in the cup is exactly what it claims to be. And you could see this in the quality before it even hits the water. Each tea bag is made from plant-based material, not plastic. So you're not, you know, you're drinking something that's not weird. You're drinking something that's clean and pure and exactly how tea should be. Every blend is crafted and packed right here in the United States by people who believe that details matter. Whether you're looking for something bright and energizing or soft and calming, Kindred Harvest is the answer. Choose American quality. Choose Kindred Harvest, cultivating goodness daily. Go to kindredharvest.co, kindredharvest.co, and use the code STU for 20% off. It's kindredharvest.co. The promo code is STU. I'm happy to welcome Miranda Devine to the program. She's a columnist for the New York Post and host of Podforce One, the podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. She also has a new piece out in the Post right now. It's a big one. FBI, Secret Service butchered the Thomas Crooks case and invited conspiracies. We deserve the truth. Be sure to check this one out. I want you to tweet out a link. Miranda, thanks so much for coming on the program and talking about this with us.
Pleasure, Stu. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This is a big story. And, you know, it's interesting because we all went through this. We all witnessed what happened with Thomas Crooks shooting at President Trump and, all, you know, coming within inches of ending his life in front of the entire country. It obviously affected everybody very deeply. And then the story sort of just went away. Like, usually there's an obsession about social media posts and what is the background of someone who would attempt to do something like that. We didn't really have that with Thomas Crooks because we were told there really wasn't anything there, right?
Yes. And look, I've kind of, since this source came to me with this information, I've kind of searched myself about why did I not look at this earlier? Why did none of us, we all dropped the ball? And when you think back to Butler, I mean, Donald Trump comes within, you know, a fraction of an inch of being shot in the head. And then 2 days later, he's in the RNC. So, or I think it was a day later. And so we're all covering then that, and then Joe Biden dropping out, and then Kamala Harris, and it's the whole election campaign. And then afterwards, I guess, you know, there was just this feeling that, oh, well, the FBI is in good hands now because Donald Trump's back in. And so that evidence, such as it is, will be forthcoming. But what we find out from Senator Ron Johnson, who his job is to do oversight of the FBI, is that his request for information for, you know, camera footage and forensics and autopsy results and other documents about the Thomas Crooks and about the assassination attempt have been just totally blockaded. He says stonewalled by the FBI, even since Kash Patel took over, to the point where Ron Johnson had to subpoena Kash Patel in July on the 12-month anniversary of Butler. So, you know, it's just very unfortunate. And I think the reason that my source has, you know, done this on his own and investigated this information and brought it forward is precisely because there hasn't been any transparency from the FBI on an enormous story that I know that the president is still not satisfied about.
I can't imagine he would be. It's fascinating. And you know, you have a list in here of all the different social media accounts that they wound up finding, your source wound up identifying. And like some of them you could see maybe might get missed somehow. I mean, I think chess.com was one of them where he had some messages. But like, it was also YouTube, right? Like, these are majors. Yeah. That's about as big of a social media as you can get. And these were not, like, you know, guys veiled attempts at, you know, threatening people and politicians. These were really overt. How is this just getting to us now?
That's right. I mean, Thomas Crooks, my source found, I think, 17 different online platforms that Thomas Crooks had accounts with. And you know, as you said, they're mainstream. I mean, it's YouTube, it's Google Play, et cetera. You know, obviously the FBI must have had that immediately afterwards. I mean, Google and YouTube were shutting down these accounts the day after Butler. So they would have done that on the instigation of the FBI. And Thomas Crooks was using his own name. My source got to these accounts through Thomas Crooks's phone number, one of his phone numbers that was made public, and an email address. And he managed to trace everything to the accounts that Thomas Crooks had set up using his name on every platform other than PayPal, when he used the name Rod Swanson, which happens to be the name of a former FBI agent who I spoke to, who is in Vegas, was had left the FBI and was working as the head of the state of Nevada's criminal investigations at the time of the Las Vegas shootings, mass shooting. That's an equally mystery by someone who equally was a ghost on social media. We were told on online platforms. We were told had no friends, acted alone. Big mystery as to motive. The difference between him and Thomas Crooks is that the Las Vegas shooter was in his 60s. Thomas Crooks was 20. But Rod Swanson, the former FBI agent, was gobsmacked when I told him that his name was on the PayPal account that Thomas Crooks had used. Rod Swanson, former FBI agent, told me he doesn't have a PayPal account, doesn't even know how to set up a PayPal account, has never talked or had anything to do with Thomas Crooks. But he did tell me that it is inconceivable, given what I told him about the violent rhetoric being espoused by Thomas Crooks online, it's inconceivable that the FBI would not have had him on their radar. So he's a very senior, experienced guy. So look, there's also a Ron Swanson character in Parks and Recreation. The source initially thought that might be who Thomas Crooks was referencing. We don't know, but I think he's a highly intelligent. We know from his school reports, Crooks was highly intelligent and he was very precise. So could have been Ron Swanson, but I thought Rod Swanson was more likely. And I did contact that former FBI agent and he said, no, he had nothing to do with him.
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense for someone who's, you know, obsessed with this type of violence to maybe know that name, even though it's not super publicly available. Let me go to the disconnect here with the FBI a little bit, because it is interesting, you know, right after this, some of this reporting sort of came out and people were making accusations. Well, you know, the FBI said there was no online footprint. The FBI made a strong statement saying, no, we never said there was no online footprint. And I mean, that might be technically true from an official, statement standpoint. But there were statements, and you highlight some of them from Christopher Wray, who kind of made it seem like really there was nothing there. Why do we think there's a disconnect, and why do we think that disconnect is continuing into the Trump administration?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but what evidence there is of this kind of secrecy is, as you say, Christopher Wray, then the FBI director, a week after Butler testified to Congress, and he said, using careful language, that we've searched our database and there's no mention of Thomas Crooks before Butler. Now, I know from the investigation, the Biden research that I did, that there were numerous derogatory information that came to the FBI about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and that influence peddling operation that the family was conducting around the world, making millions of dollars. That derogatory information that came in warning the FBI, even before Joe Biden ran for office as president, that came in and was hidden away in a secret sort of locked file away from the average FBI agent accessing. So just because you search the FBI database, as Christopher Wray told us, does not mean that this information doesn't exist in a separate part. My ears pricked up with that. And then a week later, Wray's Deputy Director Paul Abate testified to Congress, and he lied by omission. He misled Congress because he gave us only the first part of Thomas Crooks' trajectory to becoming an assassin. The first part where he was very pro-Trump, sort of anti-Semitic, sort of far-right rhetoric. And then something happened to him in January 2020 and he flipped 180 degrees and he became very anti-Trump, culminating in some very violent rhetoric in August of 2020 about military assassinating political figures and military figures. And then he goes dark. My source said he just doesn't exist. He just goes dormant on all his platforms until Butler, and then he's shot dead.
I mean, it is very, very strange in and above what we know now about him. And that's not normal behavior for someone his age in particular. But you do highlight he was violent against seemingly everybody. I mean, he was threatening left left-wing people and right-wing people all over the place in his name, and you just think they'd have to be aware of this guy, and perhaps they were.
But it's important, Stu, just to note that, yes, but that was sort of what you just said was sort of what Abate was trying to imply, but it's not technically true because he flips. So he hates Ilhan Omar and the Democrats in December of 2019, but in January of 2020, he hates Donald Trump and Donald Trump supporters who are sheep and cult and Donald Trump's racist and et cetera. So something happened to him in those 2 months that he flipped. So it wasn't just a general, I hate all politicians. It's I hate the left and then suddenly I hate the right.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't mean to mislead on that one. Yeah, you're totally right on that. And it certainly, you know, with the extension of a few years of darkness and we see where he wound up, it's pretty clear he stayed on that same path, or at least we think he did. Before you go, we've only got a couple of minutes, but I wanted to get into your, you had an interview with J.D. Vance. J.D.'s a fascinating figure who, you know, I think people first knew from his book and the success of his movie. He comes in and does a great job through the campaign, I think blows people away, you know, in the debate. What were your impressions of him and where do you think he is right now?
Look, it was the first time I'd spent any length of time with him. I had met him a couple of times before, but he was very open, really frank in a way that a lot of politicians aren't, but that Donald Trump is, and great sense of humor, very self-deprecating, absolutely adores his family, interested in his children and who they are and their little different personalities, loves his dog. I met his dog, beautiful German Shepherd, we just had a bit of a laugh because, I mean, it's not that funny, but Joe Biden also had two German Shepherds, but unlike J.D. Vance, he had no control over them. The dogs were sadly attacking Secret Service agents, drawing blood, ripping their clothes and so on, and ended up having eventually to be sent away, but only after many months of these attacks. And so I sort of asked if the Secret Service guys had PTSD when they saw the German Shepherd from the Vance family come in. And he laughed and said, yeah, well, you know, a few of them did say that they were really happy that that my dog is so well behaved. And he's trained it to, like, it is so well behaved, beautiful dog.
I know we got to get you out the door, but we only got about 30 seconds left. But last one for me, outside of any relationship with the president of the United States, is the Rubio J.D. Vance relationship maybe the most important in our government right now?
Yes, I think so. Certainly Donald Trump has said behind closed doors and more recently openly that he thinks that a J.D. Vance Rubio ticket would be unbeatable. And J.D. told me that his best friend in the government is Marco Rubio. I've seen them interact together. Very easy, humorous relationship. They share a great sense of humor. There doesn't say, you know, I asked him, is there rivalry? Like, would Rubio's obviously, I think, 10 years older than him. Wouldn't Rubio want to be like the first on the ticket? And he just laughed and said, look, we haven't even talked about that. I don't want to start thinking about that. We're too busy, you know, as he would say. But I don't detect at the moment any rivalry between them. And I think J.D. Vance would be number one on the ticket, certainly. That's what Donald Trump said.
Fascinating. Miranda Devine, New York Post columnist and host of Pod Force One. She's also broken a ton of huge stories over the years and really important to make sure you're reading her stuff and listening to the podcast. Be sure to check out her new piece over at the Post. Has all the quotes, by the way, from the social media we've been talking about. FBI, Secret Service butchered the Thomas Crooks case and invited conspiracies. We deserve the truth. That's the name of it. We'll make sure to get it up on Twitter as well. Miranda, thanks so much for all the work you do, and I appreciate
thanks
you coming
so much.
On. Thank you.
Thanks, Stu.
President Trump is going to meet with New York City Mayor-elect Zohran Mamdani in Washington, according to the president. No, I'm sure this will go fine. I'm sure everything will be fine. I will say Zohran Mamdani does have a history of being able to fool New Yorkers. So please, Mr. President, do not fall for whatever he's saying. Don't say, oh, yeah, maybe that sounds like a good idea. No, it doesn't. I think the president pretty much knows that. But it will be interesting to see if they can come to some sort of arrangement. I think the big ask from Mamdani is going to be, hey, I'm going to get some funding sent my way. Trump likes to bring these people in that he's really opposed to early on in the administration or early on. Did this even with people like Jim Comey and stuff at the very beginning. He likes to feel him out and see what kind of person he's working with. Mamdani is a slick guy, though. I mean, he's constantly smiling. He works a crowd. We will see how that goes. My guess is it's not going to go that well, frankly, but we will see. Saudi Crown Prince returns to the U.S. for his first time after the diplomatic isolation. This was a big thing. A lot of people were fired up at this because of the Khashoggi incident where this reporter was killed by the Saudi government, been highly covered. Now, of course, look, we look at there's a lot of stuff Saudi Arabia does that we don't like. We tend to overlook a lot of things. There's a giant pile of things that we overlook. That is the reality of the situation. It's weird. I mean, Trump is getting hit because he was asked about this and he just said things happen, which is true. It's hard to deny that that's true. Things do, in fact, happen. So he's right on that, but a lot of people thought maybe that wasn't quite critical enough. But again, there are murders that happen in every country. While it's not saying that you demean this or say that it isn't a big deal, it is. They've been involved in, I would argue, worse. And he's trying to come up with diplomatic relations and trying to, bring peace to the Middle East. There's lots of stuff. So, he's walking a difficult line there. But things happen, that does happen. Things also happen with Jeffrey Epstein, lots of things. By the way, the House overwhelmingly voted to release the Epstein files. Doesn't mean that they're coming out. It will go to the Senate. If it gets through the Senate, then the president would have to sign it. He's indicated that he would. So this stuff probably will come out, I guess. The vote was 427-1. What did you just say to your television or your podcast, your radio right now? Who's the one? The one is Clay Higgins, a Republican from Louisiana. And you might say, well, is he in the files? Is that the deal here? He says no, of course. He says he's been a principled no on this from the beginning in his words and says basically his reasoning is, I think there's going to be lots of people caught up on this. I mean, caught up in this that had nothing to do with the crimes. Larry Summers, I know that he wanted to have sex with his intern or whatever from these emails. Should I know that? I like knowing it because it makes me think he's not a great guy. But I don't necessarily need to know that legally. And that is his opposition. Back in a second. There's a strange assumption built into the way our healthcare system works, that every problem is kind of happening at the exact moment that the system is ready for it, right? Pharmacies will be stocked when you need it. Doctors will always be available when you need an appointment. Life will always wait until business hours. If you are the type of person who's had many late night incidents with maybe your kids getting hurt or whatever, that's not true. Jace Medical knows that's not true as well. They exist to bridge the gap with all of this stuff. They want to give you a supply of emergency antibiotics and essential medications prescribed by a licensed medical professional and delivered right to your door so that you aren't left scrambling when, timing couldn't possibly be worse. It's not about replacing your doctor or skipping proper care. It's about being completely ready to go when something's going on. Maybe when you're traveling or when the storm has knocked out power, when your pharmacy doesn't have the medication you need. What I appreciate is it's very simple, it's responsible kind of preparedness, and you're not stockpiling for the end of the world, really. You're just acknowledging how unpredictable ordinary life can be. Go to Jace.com, promo code Stu. Check out and get a discount on your order right now. If you use that promo code Stu at Jace.com, it's Jase.com. Join Blaze TV today. Get immediate access to all the amazing things we're doing here. If you go to StuDoesAmerica.com, you get access to the entire network. You can sign up, get $20 off your annual subscription. Go to StuDoesAmerica.com, sign up for Blaze TV, just $8 a month, StuDoesAmerica.com.